tonight, it's a very special Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Listen now to the latest in the war against Alzheimer's. Brought to you in partnership with the Illinois chapter of the Alzheimer's Association on 720 WGN.
Alzheimer's disease is an irreversible, progressive brain disorder that slowly destroys memory and thinking skills, and eventually the ability to carry out the simplest tasks. In most people with Alzheimer's, symptoms first appear in their mid-60s. Estimates vary, but experts suggest that more than 5.5 million Americans may have Alzheimer's. We want to thank everyone for joining us tonight. We will be carrying this special, this very important special, for 3 hours, from right now until 10 p.m. We encourage you to call, to text with any questions, any thoughts you have, any personal stories you want to share with us, and we look forward to hearing from you. Andrea, I know that you and I both were honored that we were asked to do this special for our friends, for our family, for people that we know, as well as for listeners. Such important information to share with everyone, and it's personal for so many people, not just us. My father-in-law, Gene, was one of the most incredible human beings I had the pleasure of ever knowing. The kind of guy you almost feel bad for other people that they didn't know him.
Right.
And to watch him in the final years of his life was heartbreaking. But the resiliency that he demonstrated, that his family exhibited, is something that I carry with me. Their bravery, their love for each other reminds me every single day of how important family and friends are. Andre, I know that you have been also touched by Alzheimer's in your family and friends.
Very, very dear friend of mine. Her mother suffers from Alzheimer's as well. And just to see, you know, the toll it takes on her, and she's so strong and so supportive, you know, and everyone. I wish I could have like a tenth of that strength, you know. But I think Ro said it really well, Patty, is that everybody knows someone, either a family member, a friend, a loved one, affected by this terrible disease. And we can only hope that the research that they're doing is advancing, which I think we're going to find out it is tonight. And there's so many ways that you can get involved and help. So if anything you can do, even volunteering or taking part in the walk, which we're going to be talking about later on tonight too, that's key. Just getting involved and trying to fight this terrible disease.
It really is. And we're so thrilled to have in studio with us. We have the Chief Programs Officer for the Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter. We have Melanie Chavin. Am I saying your last name correctly?
Correct, yes.
Really?
Yeah.
I don't often do that. So thank you so much for joining us, Melanie. We also have Dr. Sandra Weintraub. Am I saying your name correctly, too?
You are.
All right. Thank you so much. I know that there people have thousands of questions. Do you have people asking you all the time? I'm guessing they just, you know, I forget things. Does that mean that I'm having early onset? Do they ask those kinds of questions all the time?
Yes, they do. I am a neuropsychologist, and so part of the work that I do, in addition to research, is evaluating people who come worried about whether or not they're having problems. So, yes, I do get asked that a lot.
Quite a bit, I'd imagine. How do you distinguish between physical and cognitive changes that perhaps somebody might typically develop as they age, and the early onset of maybe memory loss or cognitive impairment, and then perhaps Alzheimer's?
Yeah, so when you say physical, are you meaning from the neck down or the neck up?
Right, exactly.
Because changes are taking place in the brain. There's no question that your brain changes over time. It's not as efficient as it used to be. You may be losing brain cells. They may not be talking to each other as much. Poor brain cells have to work very hard. They don't really grow after you're born in terms of increasing in number. So the ones that you have there are working really hard to keep up with the demand. And that's as brain cells start breaking down, that's when you start having cognitive symptoms.
When you start experiencing some of these symptoms, you know, we've been talking about this all week, and a colleague of mine literally just said tonight, oh, I forget my keys all the time. And I said, well, that's what we're going to decipher between tonight. It's not just forgetting your keys, but why don't I let you finish that thought? Because yeah. I know you have, you know, there's a saying that goes with that.
Yes, yeah. So there's lots of reasons for forgetting your keys. For most of us and for most people who are in their 20s, 30s, 40s, you don't really pay attention to your keys. And when you put them down, you're not saying to yourself, well, here are my keys. I'm leaving them right here, and then I'll go back and get them. You're distracted. And so one reason for not remembering something is because it never got into the memory center in the first place. However, the kinds of memory loss that you have with Alzheimer's is very different from that. That could be a symptom, but what's worse is that you can't retrace your steps. You don't know where you were. You might not even remember what your keys look like.
There you go, yeah.
And that's so terrifying for people. You must meet people that come in that are absolutely terrified.
Yes, it's frightening. It's very frightening to most people. And nobody wants to experience, and they're so familiar now with what it looks like as the disease progresses, that people are terrified.
Mm-hmm. How do you initially calm those fears? I mean, someone's coming to you, you know this might be the diagnosis. How do you calm those fears?
Well, you know, a lot of times when people really have serious memory loss, mm-hmm. they're not afraid. They don't think there's anything wrong. This is, to me, one of the biggest obstacles I face as a clinician, is that once the memory loss is really there and it's already started, you are completely unaware that you're forgetful. And it's very often I will have a husband and a wife, and then they'll start arguing because the wife will say, don't you know you left this door open, you forgot to pay the bills, and the affected spouse is saying, no, I'm fine. You're always picking on me.
Right.
So that is a major obstacle, and if we can get this message across that, I don't really know how to convince somebody that they really need to pay attention to their memory loss when they themselves just lack that awareness. It's something in your brain that allows you to look at yourself and say, I'm on, I'm not on, I did this wrong, I made an error. That goes away with the disease.
Right.
And folks can turn to the Alzheimer's Association too if they're curious or they have questions. And we're hoping to address as many concerns as our listeners have tonight. But of course, Melanie, you have the potential of giving people access to resources. Tell us a little bit about what people can find when they turn to you.
Probably the best resource for people that are looking for that just have some concerns about a loved one or may have some questions about the disease or maybe looking for a resource out in the community is our 24/7 helpline. The Alzheimer's Association's 24/7 helpline is 800-272-3900. And very often that's how people reach us in the first place. They'll call because they've noticed something is unusual. Like we're gearing up because the holidays are coming. That's the time of year that a lot of families first notice that there's something different about their loved one. Maybe they haven't seen them in a while. They're seeing them at Thanksgiving or Christmas and they're noticing, you know, there's something off about mom. She's just not right. So we usually get a lot of extra calls right around then. But they can contact us to find out if they have questions about what's normal and what isn't, if they're looking for a neuropsychologist or a clinician that they can talk to, if they're looking for local resources, if they're just looking to read something about Alzheimer's and figure out if that might be what it is. They can contact us with that at that number.
It is, that's the thing. You were mentioning that people are afraid to find out or, you know, to learn more. But if you're armed with the information, you can move forward, regardless of what that information might be, what you learn about yourself or your loved one.
Right. Yeah. And I think Sandy's right. You know, I think one of the things that will happen often with families is that person who has the disease will be in denial about it. It's not really denial. Part of the issue is their brain is changing and they don't recognize the symptoms. Mm-hmm. But what we can do is talk to the family member and help to get them familiar with the symptoms so that they can understand what's real and what isn't. The mm-hmm. association has a campaign called Know the 10 Signs. And so we have information out there for people that tells them how they can distinguish between regular memory loss and something that needs a clinician's attention.
What are some of the other symptoms, too?
Well, differences in judgment. So a person who always had excellent judgment, suddenly now doing things that are very unlike them. What I'll often hear are people that are suddenly very, they're doing a lot of, you know, telemarketers are calling them and trying to sell them things, and all of a sudden they're buying things that they never bought before. That might be one thing. Certainly changes in their memory, especially short-term memory. That's a real hallmark of that. So what confuses families is their loved one might remember things very clearly that happened 30 years ago, but they can't remember what happened a couple of hours ago. And that's a real issue. Another symptom, potential symptom is, as Dr. Weintraub mentioned, you know, having trouble replacing it. So misplacing things, which we all do, but not being able to retrace your steps to figure out what happened. Mm-hmm. So you can go to our website at ALZ.org and learn more about the warning signs of Alzheimer's disease.
We are going to take a break here, and a lot of texts and calls are coming in. I'm going to take Patrick's call as soon as we come back from the break, and of course we'll also address the text questions and comments that are coming in. You can join us anytime. We encourage you to call or text us at 312-981-7200. Again, that number is 312-981-7200 as we continue our conversation about Alzheimer's on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Darlis, 720 WGN. Thank you for joining us. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, and tonight we are having a special three-hour show dedicated to a discussion about Alzheimer's, and we are proud to be partnering with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter, and we've been talking with Dr. Sandra Weintraub and Chief Programs Officer for the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter, Melanie Chauvin. I got it wrong this time, didn't I?
Yeah, it's Chauvin.
Chauvin.
That's okay.
Yep, I knew it. I was going to get it wrong at some point. And we also, joining us now is a medical expert, a doctor who does a lot of the research, a lot of research in this area, Dr. Martha Claire Morris from Rush University, and Dr. Weintraub, by the way, from Northwestern University. And we have calls and texts coming in. I want to thank you so much for joining us, and we are thrilled to have you with us tonight.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here.
All of you. I want to, Patrick's been on hold for a while. People, of course, have questions about contributing factors. What are some risks involved? Are there, you know, any behaviors that might lead to this? And I know Patrick has a question. Hey, Patrick.
Hello.
Hello. What do you want to ask?
Hey, so I have a question to, first on alcohol and marijuana. You know, as kids, we've always been told that they kill brain cells. Is that true? And then second off, I've also heard that drinking anything out of aluminum cans over long periods of time has been linked to Alzheimer's. Is there anything true about that?
Anyone want to raise their hand on this one?
Okay, so
Dr. Morris.
Thank you. So alcohol consumption, yes. Alcohol consumption is, for the most part, not all that great for the brain. And in studies that have looked at the size of the brain, they've shown that with each additional ounce of alcohol consumed, the brain is smaller. So that is an indication that alcohol consumption is not good for the brain. Now, there's been other studies that have looked at people's cognitive functioning. And what these studies find is that the people who drink very, very moderately, and I would say up to more than zero, but up to one a day of, say, a 5-ounce glass of wine for women or 2 5-ounce glasses for men is healthy for the brain. And it's believed that this might be due to its beneficial effects for the cardiovascular system. And but you go above that, and you have greater risk of dementia.
And then I think he also was asking about aluminum cans.
The aluminum cans. I am not aware of any data to support that.
Okay.
I've heard that rumor too before with the aluminum and the deodorant or the zinc. So I've heard. I know there's so many rumors that are out there. You know, it helps, I think, to dispel some of these.
Right. No, as far as I know, unless
That was a very popular theory, mm-hmm, maybe 30, 40 years ago, that perhaps because I believe that aluminum is involved in some of the metabolic changes in Alzheimer's, like maybe in the amyloid pathway. I'm not sure if I have that one correctly, but that does not translate into having something in an aluminum container then going into your brain.
Thank you so much for your call, Patrick. I hope that clears
thank
up
you.
Your questions. Now, just two glasses of 5 ounces of wine.
For men.
I know. I'm telling Patrick directly. One 5-ounce glass of wine for women. Thank you so much, Patrick. Have a great evening, okay?
Thank you. You too.
Of course. I know that, Andrea, we have a lot of texts came in during the day, too, with folks that had questions, and I want to make sure we get to those, because John Williams was talking to a doctor, because obviously former Justice Sandra Day O'Connor came out yesterday and talking about her battle with Alzheimer's. And it does, when we have conversations, when someone like Sandra Day O'Connor, it comes forward, how does that have an impact for the Alzheimer's Association?
It is a huge impact. I mean, it's a very brave thing that she did. A lot of people, there's still a stigma attached with Alzheimer's disease. And we think, you know, the association really applauds her for coming forward, because the more people that are notable people that come forward and will share their diagnosis, I think the less the stigma there will be. And I think the more awareness there is of the disease.
And again, like we said before, dispelling the myths too and whatnot. As Patty said, John Williams was promoting the special, and people were calling and texting in. In fact, his producer handed us a big stack of texts that came through, and one really resonated. And again, this could be another myth, but I think we should dispel it. I'm 62 years old. I have had 11 concussions in my lifetime. Now I'm having a hard time with my memory. Should I be concerned? Could this be Alzheimer's?
So there is, as you probably all know, it's chronic traumatic encephalopathy that has kind of come to the forefront in recent years as being a potential mechanism. I don't really think that there is enough evidence. It for sure, there is no question that you should not concuss your brain if you can possibly avoid it, and that multiple concussions isn't really good for your brain, period. Whether or not it is a precursor of Alzheimer's, I think, remains to be seen, in my opinion.
And I know that we have a listener from Grays Lake who wants to join the conversation. I don't want to put anybody on hold for too long, because I know how important this topic is for people. Hey, John, how are you doing tonight?
I'm well. How are you?
Very well. What did you want to ask our guests?
I'm interested in what they predict is the future of research. I know that the Alzheimer's Association spends a lot of their money on drug research, but following the dismal failures of so many of the plaque-busting drugs in the last, several years or longer, is there a direction that research seems to be going in from that, or following that, or because of that?
What do you think, Doc?
The Alzheimer's Association is sponsoring a very exciting prevention trial called U.S. Pointer that is a replication of a successful study that was conducted in Finland that approached prevention by having many different interventions that people did all at once. And what they're going to be doing in the U.S. is they will be asking people who are enrolled in the trial to follow the MIND diet, to exercise with the intention of exercising 4 times a week, to practice cognitive training exercises, and to manage their cardiovascular conditions much better. So this would be having regular checkups to control hypertension, for example, and then finally being more socially active. So people will be randomized to this structured, very active and guided in multi-component intervention, or they'll be given some general educational materials and be loosely guided, but so it's more self-guided for the control group.
We will continue our conversation. Thank you so much for calling, John. And again, we're getting a tremendous amount of texts and calls are coming in. We encourage you to join the conversation. We will do our best to make sure everyone is included in this. 312-981-7200. We are live in the All States Showcase studio for our very special episode of the in partnership with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter. We'll be having this conversation through the rest of most of the evening. And we are in studio right now with Dr. Sandra Weintraub from Northwestern University, Dr. Martha Claire Morris from Rush University, and Melanie Chavin, the program Chief Programs Officer, Alzheimer's Association, Illinois Chapter. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis on 720 WGN.
Back to our special evening, sharing stories of courage and resilience in the face of Alzheimer's. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis on 720 WGN.
Experts suggest that more than 5.5 million Americans may have Alzheimer's, and we are proud to be partnering with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter to have this conversation with you tonight, and we encourage you to join us anytime at 312-981-7200. Joining us in studio right now with me and Andrea are Dr. Sandra Weintraub, Dr. Martha Claire Morris, and the Chief Programs Officer for the Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter, Melanie Chavin. And now I feel badly. I'm like making a face. I'm like, it's a hard
day. No, it's okay.
Yeah, and I also comment on it. We have a lot of texts and comments coming in. Obviously, callers are joining us as well. I want to make sure that people understand, and maybe people are also joining us. So to understand what is Alzheimer's and dementia, I'm not sure who wants to take that. We'll go with Dr. Sandra.
Yeah, that is probably the most common question I get asked whenever I go and talk to the public about this disorder. Dementia is an umbrella term. It refers to symptoms that are expressed by a person, and the symptoms are a very slow, progressive change in their typical way of thinking, of remembering. The early symptoms could also even be in personality changes, and the symptoms interfere with their customary daily functioning. And that's the definition of dementia. Now, once you have defined it that way, over the age of 65, there are many, 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 many causes of that particular. We call it a syndrome. It's a dementia syndrome. And there are many causes. But Alzheimer's disease, which consists of molecular abnormalities in the brain, is the most common cause over the age of 65. But I think what's very important is that people shouldn't just assume because they have a dementia that it is Alzheimer's disease. It's really important to try to figure out, is it Alzheimer's or is it something else that is potentially reversible or treatable?
Getting a lot of great texts too. This is one that I've seen recurring already with some of our listeners. How do you address the issue of driving a car when an affected mm-hmm. family member is in the early stages of Alzheimer's?
And it's so hard too, because taking keys away from somebody, because it's a form of taking away their independence, isn't it?
Yeah. I think one of the big challenges, and we get this question all the time at the Alzheimer's Association, is, as Dr. Weintraub mentioned earlier, people with memory issues may not always recognize the memory issues, so they may also not recognize that they have issues with driving. And so it's really important for families to sit down and have honest conversations with people. There are some tools that people can use. The Alzheimer's Association on ALZ.org website has a dementia and driving resource center, and there are some videos and some materials there that people can use to help them to have that conversation with a family member. I think what's important to remember is you don't necessarily have to take the keys away from someone the minute that they're diagnosed. It all depends on how early they are in the disease process. And so talking to their neurologist or neuropsychologist to find out what's going on with them and whether or not driving is safe or not is a really important thing to do. So
one of the things that we typically suggest for families and for the affected individual is to take a driving evaluation. Not the kind of driving evaluation that the Registry of Motor Vehicles does, but one that's offered by a rehabilitation center where they will actually, before they even let you in the car, will give you some tests of your reaction time and choices and paying attention, then put you in the car on the road. And I think that that's a lot more palatable than saying to someone, you really shouldn't be driving, because it's an objective assessment.
Right. Oh, that makes so much sense. Mm-hmm. Dr. Morris, you mentioned earlier physical activity and the mind diet. Can you tell us a little bit more about how that plays a role for whether it's the prevention or also the treatment?
Well, they have different ways in which exercise and the mind diet and the foods and nutrients in the mind diet, they have different mechanisms by which they protect the brain.
Okay.
So diet, which is my main area of research, when you think of all the foods you eat, they contain many different nutrients. And we've learned over the years that vitamin E and folate and DHA, which is one of the omega-3 fatty acids, are and lutein, one of the what we call carotenoids, have been probably have the most evidence for being protective of the brain. And they have different ways in which they're protective. They can protect the brain against oxidative stress, which is one of the most important ways that vitamin E protects the brain. So when you put these all together in a food pattern, it's likely to be vegetable oils, like olive oil is a primary source of vitamin E. Vegetables contain both folate and vitamin E. DHA is in fish sources. So the mind diet has many of the foods of the mind diet are these types of foods that are potent in the nutrients that protect the brain. And then there's the foods that are harmful for the brain, saturated fats and trans fats that you get in processed foods are two of the deleterious nutrients. So having a diet that is lower in those kinds of fats are, so that would be lower amounts of red meat, less amounts of fried foods, less sweets and pastries, that kind of thing. So the nutrients are important for oxidative stress and lowering inflammation and helping the neurons to operate at their most functional level. And then exercise, central to exercise is its cardiovascular component. And it also stimulates some hormones. Brain-derived neurotrophic factor is one of the hormones that it stimulates that has a positive protective effect on the brain.
Text question, kind of an offshoot of a memory question. Can you or one of the doctors explain the loss of executive function? Many people think the disease shows symptoms only in memory. Thank you. My husband was diagnosed 7 years ago. He is now 84 and unable to take care of himself at all.
Yes. So typically, for reasons we still don't understand, when the earliest protein abnormalities affect the brain, they affect just those centers that control short-term memory. But over time, the pathology moves farther and farther out away from those areas. And so your brain is, it's like a very miraculous, busy factory where there's different sections doing different things. If the disease abnormal proteins goes to the area of your brain that controls your ability to be organized, to these executive functions, to plan your time accordingly, to monitor errors, then you will have executive symptoms. There's also parts of the brain that control your ability to talk, language. If the disease goes to the language area, you'll have symptoms called aphasia, which is difficulty coming up with words.
When my father-in-law Gene passed away, one of the things that my son Griffin heard in the hallway, he was 5 years old, was that one of my sisters-in-law said, "Well, Grandpa's brain just forgot to tell him to keep breathing," and that's kind of one of the other things too that I've come to understand is that it can also just the things that we take for granted, moving and breathing, because your brain also manages those functions, doesn't it?
Yeah, the breathing is more of a automatic, autonomic function. Mm-hmm. And the walking, however, things that require you to navigate or make decisions about where you're going, or can you fit in this space, or are you going to bump into something?
Right.
Those are more of the things that get affected by Alzheimer's disease.
We have so many texts coming in. We want to make sure we get to as many as we can. We are talking to a doctor. I'm sorry. Whenever I think of Jean, we're talking to Dr. Martha Claire Morris from Rush University. We're talking to Dr. Sandra Weintraub from Northwestern and Melanie Chavin from the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter. She's the chief program officer. More with our guests when we come back on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis on 720 WGN.
It's a battle worth fighting. It's the war on Alzheimer's. And Patty Vasquez and Andrea Darlis are talking about it right now. It's our three-hour special in partnership with the Illinois chapter of the Alzheimer's Association on WGN Radio.
And it's our honor to welcome to our studio Dr. Sandra Weintraub, who is with Northwestern University. We also have Dr. Martha Claire Morris from Rush University and Melanie Chavin, who's the Chief Programs Officer for Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter. I want to make sure, Melanie, that folks have the resources or at least access to information. How can people find out more?
They can find out by contacting the Alzheimer's Association. You can contact us by telephone day or night at 800-272-3900, or you can visit our website in Illinois. That website is alz.org/Illinois. But anywhere else in the country, alz.org, you can find your local chapter.
Excellent. So please look for more information. And we're trying to get to as many texts and calls as possible. I know you had another text as well, Andre.
Yeah, this came in earlier today from John Williams. John mentioned that we were going to be doing this special and was just had a barrage of texts. This is from the 815. My little brother was diagnosed early onset 4 years ago. He turned 57 last Tuesday. One of the first things that happened is that he lost his twos. He was let go from his job. He is an MBA. Now he seems to be violent and doesn't recognize anyone. Yeah. The question is, how high is the incidence of such early onset?
It's actually, I guess, fortunately, pretty low. The typical age at onset is really 65 and up. But this early onset disease, I think we're recognizing it more and more as we're starting to understand that the symptoms in a younger person really should be treated more seriously. I think a lot of times younger people get referred to a psychiatrist or they think it's a midlife crisis. But there are even younger onset in their 40s, which is familial, which is due to an autosomal dominant mutation. But that fortunately accounts for about 5 to 10% of all Alzheimer's disease.
It's gotta be so terrifying too. We have a lot of questions coming in. I'm trying to make sure I get to the ones that were coming in earlier as well. From the 224, is there a higher risk for someone who might be diagnosed with ADHD or bipolar or other disorders that have any sort of? Is there any correlation, perhaps? No.
No, not that we know of.
All right. Just want to make sure that we address as many questions as possible. And I know we had a question about research. How important is global research and coordinating? Are you able to work with people in other countries as you look into more of the causes and the outcomes?
More and more global research is going on, and it's very important. It helps looking at the disease through different cultures, different genetic predispositions is very important for helping to identify the risks for Alzheimer's as well as the trajectory. And actually, the Alzheimer's Association is involved in a number of global projects. I mentioned earlier the U.S. Pointer Study, which is based on a Finnish study called FINGER. Mm-hmm. And this replications of that study are going on worldwide now. So it's not just the U.S. replicating the study. I don't know if you want to go on.
Yeah, there's also the Alzheimer's Disease Neuroimaging Initiative, which has been ongoing now for 15 years, I think, which is one of the most far-reaching studies that have been done, where we've really learned so much about the biology and the progression of disease from somebody who's perfectly normal to the point of dementia. And that's being carried out in Canada, the U.S., all over Europe, Australia, China.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Here's another text. I'm 55. I've had word finding and slight memory issues for about 5 years. My dad had a stroke at 88. His death certificate listed Alzheimer's as a cause of death. Is this something I need to be concerned about? And what can I do proactively? You hear questions like that about with the word finder and Sudoku and playing puzzles and games like that to keep your memory strong.
Yeah. If you have one person in the family who has had Alzheimer's, your parent, say, but nobody else in the family has it, you may be at slightly increased risk from somebody who doesn't have that history, but it's certainly not something that would make you really fear that you're headed down that road. As I said, the inherited Alzheimer's disease typically are about 5 to 10%. On the other hand, it never hurts to try to be good to your brain under any circumstances. And so what Dr. Morris was saying, whatever you do that's good for your heart is also good for your brain. Eating properly, exercise, we would all benefit from that.
It's such good information to have, and I know, you know, sometimes people feel like, well, you know, I'm at this point, I've already done the damage, but there are so many steps you can take to improve your life and
yes.
prolong your life.
Yes. So some of the other lifestyle factors that are being explored and looking very promising for disease prevention, other than diet and exercise, would include, as I mentioned before, controlling conditions. So if you have symptoms of diabetes, go see a doctor and get it treated. If you you should know your blood pressure and your cholesterol levels. These are all conditions that have very successful treatments, and that can help to lower your risk of developing Alzheimer's. Sleep is another category. So there's more and more data that's leading to our understanding of how adequate sleep can maybe help to reduce your risk of developing Alzheimer's disease. Stress levels are another.
That was actually a test too. How about stress as a contributor to dementia?
Yeah, so it's an area that is one of the more recent areas of study, but certainly looking promising that managing stress is a good way to also protect your brain.
Before we, it's such an extraordinary conversation. I hate to bring it to a close in a moment, but I know one of the biggest questions people have for all of you is how far away are we from a cure? I know. Is that anything that, right, nobody has an answer to that because it's such a complicated issue, of course.
Yeah, I think we're closer than ever to really trying to prevent mm-hmm. this cascade from taking place, and that we're understanding that changes in the brain are happening before you show the signs of dementia. So I'm very hopeful, just like we dealt with heart disease, high cholesterol, that when you identify those people who might be at highest risk and you can treat that underlying source, then you can prevent the other changes from taking place.
I want to thank you all so much for joining me and Andrea tonight. Again, we've been talking to Dr. Sandra Weintraub from Northwestern University, Dr. Martha Claire Morris from Rush University, and Melanie Chavin, Chief Programs Officer, Alzheimer's Association, Illinois Chapter. And again, information for folks who want to learn more.
You can call our helpline, 800-272-3900, or visit alz.org.
Thank you again so much for joining us tonight.
Thank you.
Really appreciate it. More on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andre Dos in a moment on 720 WGN. WGN is proud to partner with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter to raise awareness and understanding about the impact of Alzheimer's. We've been talking about what Alzheimer's is. Now let's learn about what it's like to live with the disease every day. We're going to introduce you to Tom Doyle, who is living with Alzheimer's, and his husband, Levi Doyle. Andrea and I are so happy to have you in studio tonight.
We absolutely are, Tom and Levi. Thank you for being with us. Tom, we'll start with you. What were your initial warning signs that there was change in your memory, thinking, or behavior?
Okay. That's a real good question. I was a professor for 20 years. And during that time, I taught the same courses over and over to graduate students. And there came a time around 2013 where I'd walk into the classroom and I couldn't remember what I was teaching. And so I would stand there in front of the students and say things like, what was I trying to say? Or can you ask that question again? Or let's see if we can find that answer somewhere else. So I was really struggling. At the same time, I was seeing a psychologist, and the psychologist noticed that I was repeating myself over and over again and that I was losing words. So my anxiety started to rise. At the university level, I had been a dean of students and director of the graduate studies program and in a number of different administrative roles. And one by one, I started to check myself out from those because I couldn't handle the communication that was going on between me and my peers. I was getting lost in the conversations. I was losing thoughts. I was repeating myself. So in August 2014, I just went to my chairs of my teacher education department and I said, I can't do this anymore. And so on August 14th, 2014, I was employed. And on August 16th, 2014, I wasn't employed because they said to me, well, you don't have to come in anymore. And so, so all of a sudden, I was left alone without a sense of purpose because I'd been a teacher for 45 years and had really struggled for that first year and a half. I was diagnosed by a neurologist as having dementia. They didn't know exactly what was wrong with me, but they knew something was wrong, and I obviously knew something was wrong. It wasn't until I came to Illinois, and it's because of Levi that I came to Illinois. We were living in Los Angeles at the time, and Levi asked me, where do you think you'd feel more supported? And so I came back home to Illinois. This is where my father lives and my two brothers live. So we came back to Illinois and to be with family. Mm-hmm. And it was here in Illinois that I was finally diagnosed with Alzheimer's. I go to Alexian Brothers Hospital, and my doctor, Dr. Forchetti, diagnosed me with Alzheimer's. And that was only about 8 months ago. So this is a relatively new diagnosis for me. Before, they thought it was just mild cognitive impairment, and then they thought it was Lewy body dementia, and now they've come up with the formal diagnosis of Alzheimer's.
Tom, I'm wondering, when you started going to see them at Alexian Brothers and you've got the diagnosis, what was that process like? What kind, were they sort of like visual tests? Were there written tests, auditory tests? I'm just curious about what that process was like for you.
Well, I had a number of MRIs, and so that was done first. And then I went through a series of cognitive tests. Mm-hmm. And those cognitive tests took about a half a day. And during that time, they checked out my executive function, my cognitive skills, my verbal skills, my memory skills, and they determined that I did have cognitive impairment. Mm-hmm. My cognitive functions were mildly impaired, and they continue to be mildly impaired, although they've gotten a little bit worse.
Levi, what concerns did you notice when all this started? What did you think was going on?
I wasn't sure what was going on. I noticed long before he stopped working that he was forgetting things around the house. He had a home office, and the home office was a mess, and he was repeating himself. And I started wondering to myself, I said, well, how is he functioning at work? Because he has such a fast-paced job and with a lot of responsibilities. And I was really concerned that he was not functioning very well at work. He was in denial. I mean, he denied it to me, if I had a question about it, but I knew something was wrong. And, I really didn't know what was going on, to be honest with you. I just knew something was wrong.
It's scary. I mean, yeah. It is scary. I mean, that has to be one of the first emotions that goes through your mind, especially is fear.
Yep.
What can I do to help?
What can I do to help? And how do I fix this? And how do I make him admit that there's something wrong.
Right, because there's a moment we have to kind of help him be comfortable, and then you both have to be comfortable with what is going to happen next. Because isn't a big part of it is the unknown of it, right? We kind of have this idea, this background noise of what Alzheimer's and dementia are, but when it's happening to you, it all seems a little bit fuzzy, doesn't it?
Exactly.
You know, it's so interesting that you said that. This afternoon, I was riding in the elevator at our building, and a woman looked at me. I said to her that I have Alzheimer's, and she looked at me and she said, "You don't look like you have Alzheimer's."
And people say those kinds of things.
And they do. They do. Because, and I wanted to ask, well, what does a person with Alzheimer's look like?
Right. Mm-hmm.
And it looks like me. Yeah. It looks like me.
Here I am.
And here I am.
Right. Have you been receiving those kinds of comments from colleagues and family members? Or I'm guessing, of course, when you share that with a stranger, you never know what kind of response you're going to get, do you?
I never know what kind of response I'm going to get. Family has accepted the diagnosis, and they're very supportive. They all support me and are encouraging me. I wish I could spend more time with them. And the reason we moved to the Breakers was because we were living in an apartment outside of the city of Chicago, and I was lonely, and I was all alone, and bored, and anxiety and depression are all a part of Alzheimer's. And so I was experiencing all of those, and so I needed to be in a place where I felt more supported.
Sure.
And supported.
Well, it sounds as though you didn't know from 2014 when you let your faculty members know that you needed to take time or that this was happening to you, and then you were let go. From that time until only about 8 months ago, you didn't actually know that you had Alzheimer's. What was finding out like? What was that emotional impact like to find out that you had Alzheimer's?
You know, when I was diagnosed with Lewy body, I didn't really know what Lewy body dementia was, and so there wasn't much impact. But when I was diagnosed with Alzheimer's, it was quite an impact that it had on me. My mother had died of Alzheimer's, and so did my grandfather. And so I had watched them go through the process of dying with the disease. And so it was very fresh in my mind. I remember sitting by my mom's bedside as she was dying of the disease. And so I saw it as a death sentence. Yeah. And I really became depressed. I really became depressed. And if it wasn't for the Alzheimer's Association and in my work with them, I think I would have been lost and had so little purpose. But I've been given so much purpose because of the work that I do with the Alzheimer's Association.
How did they change your mentality and your vision that it's not a death sentence? I mean, how do they positively reinforce you?
Well, it's interesting. I go all over the place speaking about Alzheimer's and what it's like to live with Alzheimer's. And a couple of times I've had to speak at I've had to do a presentation called A Reason to Hope. And so I've had to come up for reasons to hope. Sure. And I do have a lot of reason to hope. I have many, many, many good things going on in my life. I have a supportive husband. I have a great family. I have this work that I do with the Alzheimer's Association. And so I have a very fulfilling life, very fulfilling life.
How have you guys changed? How have you both changed your daily routine?
I do a lot more of the things around the house now than I used to. He also has Parkinson's, so there's some physical issues as well. So as far as my daily routine is, used to be just doing laundry and cleaning the house and cooking and doing all and making sure that, you know, he's taken care of to the best of my ability. Our daily routine has changed a bit in the past few days because we've moved to a independent living facility. Mm-hmm. And today the lady came in and cleaned her house for us, and I was like, wow, this is awesome.
go on.
Can I move something for you?
Yeah. There you go.
So we're going to have someone that comes in once a week to clean our house. And then their laundry service came in and took all the laundry. And I'm like, so what do I do now? I guess I'll go outside with the dog.
Yeah.
Right. Yeah. So things are going to be a lot easier for me
right
now that we've moved there. And
it's good.
And it's going to be a lot better for him socially as well. Mm-hmm.
That's lovely.
Yeah.
We'll take a break here. You're listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. WGN has partnered with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter to raise awareness and understanding about the impact of the Alzheimer's disease. And we want to thank Tom and Levi Doyle for joining us and sharing their story. More with them when we come back in a moment on 720 WGN. You are listening to the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, and we are in studio with Levi and Tom Doyle, who have been so gracious with their time as WGN partners with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter to talk about Alzheimer's and the impact this disease has on families. And of course, Tom, we've been talking about what this has been like for you and and of course, your care partner. I was listening to us everyone was talking earlier. We often talk about caregivers or caretakers and things like that. Sometimes it really is a little bit about the language, isn't it? The diagnosis, the actual disease.
Yes, it is.
And it has an impact, don't you think?
I do. I do believe that the it has a lot of, it has a great deal of impact. To think of him as my care partner instead of my caregiver gives me a lot of, it's really great. It's really great for me because I see him as a partner in this battle that I struggle with rather than somebody who is just giving me the care that I need because I want to be his partner still. I don't want to give up my life.
Right.
I want to live a fulfilling life. And I am living a fulfilling life. And a lot of that is due to the fact that I'm living with this wonderful man who has continued to give himself to me in spite of all of the challenges that I faced. So, yeah.
It is a partnership.
It is forever. Definitely a partnership.
Absolutely.
It definitely is.
How have you both chosen to focus on living well with Alzheimer's? How do you stay so positive?
I got to tell you, before I moved into the Breakers, I was really struggling with depression and loneliness because Levi drives for Uber. And I'd be at home all day and not have anything to do or any interaction with other people. And people with Alzheimer's need a lot of interaction with other people in order to keep themselves cognitively fit. And so I was just really lonely. And so, you know, it was a real step for us as partners to take to move into a senior living, independent living community.
What's that like? Talk a little bit about it. You smile when you talk about the Breakers, and Levi seems very happy too with the the cleaning arrangements. It sounds like a wonderful arrangement. Tell us like what everyday life is like for you there.
I don't really know what everyday life is going to be like because we just moved in 7 days ago, but I can tell you that I am really thrilled to be there because for the first time I'm not alone and I have activities that I can be involved with. And that's so important for people with Alzheimer's that are struggling with Alzheimer's. I need to keep busy and I need to keep active physically, emotionally, and mentally. And so that Breakers does offer me all those different opportunities. And for him, I think he doesn't have to worry about leaving me at home anymore.
Right.
Exactly. I used to be really nervous about leaving him for any long period of time. I would drive for a couple hours and then come back and check on him. Like you said, now I don't have to worry about that. I can go do whatever I need to do and know that he's going to be safe. And if something happens, there's so many people around that it's going to be taken care of.
It's a huge difference in your life. No. Well, what would you say to other care partners, Levi, when it comes to one, finding out that, you know, maybe life has taken a turn that you didn't expect, but what kind of adjustments you can make or what you've made to deal?
The adjustments I've made,
what advice can you give to other care partners?
I say be very patient. You have to be patient and very empathetic.
Mm-hmm.
The things that your partner with Alzheimer's is going through, they're not forgetting things and things like that. They're not doing it on purpose. It's because of the disease. So you have to be patient. When they repeat themselves, you just got to be patient. And it used to irritate me. You know, when he first started, it irritated me. I just told you that.
Right.
And you just told me that. You know, it's like, why are you repeating the same story again? As that sort of thing. And now, most of the time, I don't even let on that he's already repeated it. I just pretend like it's the first time he's ever said it. I said, oh, okay.
Right.
And so that's, for me, that's my way of being empathetic to what's going on with him.
Do you ever feel the sense, and this is why I asked about adjustments, I think that sometimes as a care partner, you have to kind of forgive yourself too, and you know, on top of giving him some room, being more patient, you have to forgive yourself in some ways too, don't you think?
Yeah.
And that's hard to say sometimes.
And that's a tricky little balance there too. Yeah.
What would you both say to someone who is concerned? Because you initially, Tom, you said you were at you were going into class and forgetting why you were there, or different topics, and Levi said, you know, the office was looking cluttered. What would you say to someone who maybe is experiencing these symptoms, yet are too scared to go to a doctor or too scared to check it out?
It's essential to go to a doctor. I sought out a neurologist immediately. And my neurologist was not a memory specialist at the time because I have Parkinson's and I was diagnosed with Parkinson's the same year as dementia. So I was going to him for Parkinson's, but he's the one that gave me the first cognitive testing that was done. And he's the one that identified that I had a cognitive impairment. But I would say going to the doctor is extremely important because I have the support of the Alzheimer's Association now, right. Which I would not have had. I have memory medications that I'm on, which are just great, which I wouldn't have. And those are helping to stall the progress of the disease. And so it's essential that you're diagnosed early. It's essential. And it's frustrating as you're going through the process because you feel pretty helpless in the whole thing and you're going through so many changes and you're so worried about how people are going to react to you. But if you don't go in for a diagnosis, you're just really impeding yourself.
Right. And you mentioned the supports and the impact that the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter has had. Tell us a little bit about those supports and how they've helped you navigate these weird waters.
Well, I'm a member of a couple of support groups with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter, and Levi and I both attend these. All of the activities that I do, Levi does also. He has to attend all the meetings with me, or he doesn't have to, but he doesn't have to do anything, yeah. Really. Aww. But he willingly comes to all of the activities that I'm involved with. We've become very involved in an early stage Alzheimer's support group. So we meet regularly with other people who are in the early stages of Alzheimer's. We are in an early onset Alzheimer's group because I was diagnosed at the age of 62, which is earlier than 65. And so anything earlier than 65 is considered early onset.
Okay.
And I'm on the National Alzheimer's Board early stage advisory board. So I'm one of eight people that is one of the national spokespersons for people who have Alzheimer's and letting people know what it's like to live with the disease.
Right. And Levi, you found it helpful too, I'm sure, to go to the meetings. And would you encourage other spouses to do the same?
Absolutely. Yeah. You have no idea how helpful that is. I used to feel so alone. He says that he felt lonely, alone and lonely. So did I. Oh. And unfortunately, that it was for two separate reasons. I mean, it was the same general reason. But I was lonely because I couldn't vent to him about him.
Right. Right. Exactly.
Yeah. So going to the support rooms was very helpful. And I got to learn a lot about a lot of coping skills and things like that through the support groups. And I say, don't be afraid to even go to therapy.
Yeah.
I mean, yeah,
absolutely.
The therapy has helped as well. So it's always good to go in and just vent and talk about all your problems, let everything out, and then walk out the door.
Yeah, it's true. Yeah,
it can be crucial. We don't want anyone to be lonely or alone, and we want to thank you so much for having such an impact. I know that this has reached somebody out there who really understands so much more, and hopefully will reach out. We want to encourage anyone who wants to learn more to visit alz.org/Illinois, and there is a free helpline 24/7. You can call 1-800-272-3900. Again, the website is alz.org/Illinois, or you can call the free helpline 24/7 at 1-800-272-3900. It has been an incredible honor to have you both in studio with us. Thank you so much, Tom.
Absolutely.
Thank you so much.
Such a pleasure. And to hear you both speak to us and to our audience and about each other is just heartwarming. You could see the undying love that you both have for each other. And this journey that you take together, we wish you the best and all our thoughts and prayers. And I'm glad the Alzheimer's Association has helped you the way it has.
Thank you so much.
Again, thanks for having us.
Thank you for being here.
Enjoy the rest of your evening. More after this on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Our phone lines are open if you want to give us a call and share your stories. If you have any questions or comments, 312-981-7200. You can call or text us to that number. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
Tonight, it's a very special Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. Listen now to the latest in the war against Alzheimer's. Brought to you in partnership with the Illinois chapter of the Alzheimer's Association on 720 WGN.
WGN is proud to be partnering with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter in our conversation about this disease that affects, experts believe, maybe more than 5.5 million Americans. And we are taking your calls and your texts, and we look forward to hearing from you. I know that this is sometimes hard to talk about, so don't feel badly if you want to text us anything, any thoughts that you have. Joining us in studio is Melissa. Melissa, tell us about your role with the Alzheimer's Association.
Hi. I'm the director of the Helpline and Support Services for the Illinois chapter. So I manage 85 caregiver support groups throughout the state of Illinois, our early stage services, and the care navigation program. All of these are supports that help people living with dementia in Illinois and their family and caregivers.
And thank you so much for joining us in the studio. Andrea and I want to make sure we try to get to as many of these questions and thoughts as possible. I know we might not be able to answer all of them, whether because of time or information. I also am honored to hear personal stories, and our very own Catherine Lake joins us. Hey, Catherine, how are you doing?
I'm doing terrific. Thanks.
Thank you so much.
It's such what a great topic this is for you guys to be taking on, especially right now. And so many people are getting older. We're hitting the 60s and the 70s for the baby boomers, and it's overwhelming. Our own family started this journey probably, I don't know, the early 80s, and my mother began taking hormones when she lost her uterus to a hemorrhage. And by 2006, she got breast cancer. By 2008, she had to retire from her last church gig as an organist because she was getting lost on her way home. And then my sister and I decided to tell her she was starting to repeat her story. So she's now in her 10th year.
And how old was she when she was diagnosed, Catherine?
Diagnosed probably in 08, I'd say. We got her tested, and she was in denial from the very beginning. She was one of those. I'm not, then I just won't talk as much. That's my answer. But she has remained the joyous person she always was, and it has a lot to do with the caregivers that she is so blessed to have, including my sister who lives nearby. So finding the breakers or a place like that, because eventually, if you can't get a team in your home, it's better to have a team with them in a place being cared for, as well as I know the folks at the Breakers and the place where my parents are in Norfolk, Virginia. I'm just so blessed to have these people who care and get it and know how to speak to them. You just look them in the eye and talk gently and gently hold their hands. And the enrichment programs that they provide at places like this are really more important than you can possibly imagine before you're in it.
And that's the thing is that, you know, reaching out and making sure you have everything in place. Melissa, how can people find out more about places like the Breakers and places that, like Catherine's talking about?
Yeah, I really want to emphasize what Catherine said about you need people. You need people to help you. It's really important to think about putting together your care team and your support team. And that's something that the Alzheimer's Association helps people with. You can call our helpline. We have a 24-hour helpline, 1-800-272-3900. There are social workers and counselors available at that number 24 hours a day that can provide people with resources, referrals, lists of these providers, the in-home care that you were talking about that is so important, and also just be a listening ear for you while you talk about what you're going through.
And I think
you were our first stop. You were our first stop. The Alzheimer's Association in Norfolk, Virginia, they were so helpful. I had to bring my father in to say, this is real. This is happening. She needs to be in special care now. It was a very tough transition.
That's wonderful to hear that. So many times we hear people say, I wish I'd known about you sooner, and to hear that we were your first stop, that's great. And I'm so happy that we were able to help you and your father through that difficult time.
That's what Tom and Levi said two times, that that's why they moved, a huge reason is why they moved back to Illinois. Mm-hmm. Is because of the help that the organization gave them.
Right, and because they have family here.
Yeah.
You know, that Levi recognized that Tom would want to be close to his family, so they made that transition here. Yeah.
And what you didn't see, Melissa, is your entire crew outside the windows when Catherine said that the Alzheimer's Association was the first place that she went to. They all like gave out cheering.
Thumbs
just
up.
Very
yeah.
excited about that. Catherine, I think one of the questions that we don't often ask people in the family is, how are you doing?
Well, that's nice. You know, I am once removed in Chicago. My brother's once removed over on the West Coast. So it almost is like the pain radiates across the country. My sister sees her every other day, probably. And that is both joyous and really hard.
Mm-hmm.
And so for me, it's funny. I dip in once a month or so. I fly in and I see her eyes and I hold her hand and I pretend she hears me and I pretend she's saying things that make sense. We have pretend wonderful conversations that are meaningless and precious all at once. But I get to fly home.
Right.
So I dive back into my daughter and I pretend that I don't have a future like that. And I talk to my sister and I talk to her a lot.
Mm-hmm.
That's what we do. We, the caregivers, even though she's not living with my sister, she is a caregiver. And so she needs to call and say, oh, she said this today. She sends me little videos. I watch every second of them. She has a music therapist who goes in twice a week now, because the facility itself brings her in, and then my father brings her in an extra time because my mother is a retired pianist. So music was very important to her, and I see pictures twice a week from this music therapist. And it's just it's wonderful to be able to monitor and to know she's safe from a distance.
Yeah, it is.
I have a friend whose mother lives here, and my friend Claudia lives in Washington, D.C., and I've gone and visited with her mom, you know, and she tells me stories about Claudia and her daughters growing up, and then she'll start the story over again. And it's in that moment that you realize, I mean, let them talk. As Catherine said, hold their hand. Be there with them.
Absolutely. Right? That connection persists right to the very end, and it is so important. And that's what we tell people, you know, meet people where they are. Look for those moments of joy. Look for those moments of connection. That's really important, and I think it's very valuable. I think it's for both of you.
There's also, I mean, this has something to do with what Catherine was talking about early on, too. A couple of texts now we're getting like this. How do you care for an individual with early onset dementia when they're in denial initially?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So, you know, it's a hard diagnosis and it's hard to take in, but I think most of the time when people lack insight into the fact that they have an impairment, it's not denial in the sense of psychological denial where we're just not admitting it to ourselves. It's new information that they can't understand. That's a symptom of the disease. It's
right.
The brain cannot learn new information and they're not learning that new information.
Mm-hmm.
So it is hard. It's challenging. You have to learn how to communicate with them. The first rule of communicating with somebody with dementia is don't argue. And that's also the second and the third rule.
Right.
Because you're arguing with the dementia.
Mm-hmm.
And you have to figure out ways to get them safe and then think about keeping them happy, finding out how to approach them, picking your battles, knowing what's important, what's not important. These are difficult skills to learn, and people get thrown into it. They don't have training, so they have to learn as they go. Mm-hmm. So a lot of what we do is talk to people about communicating, setting up services, approaching them in a way where you're getting their needs met, but you're also respecting their dignity. It's a tightrope. It's a hard balance. But it's not really denial. It's right. A part of the disease.
Yeah.
Catherine, you mentioned one of the important steps and first steps is reaching out to organizations like the Alzheimer's Association. What other kind of advice do you give to people out there who are maybe finding out for the first time, or maybe they're in the throes of it and still need a voice like yours, who's in, and maybe you need voices reaching out.
Yeah, well, yeah.
We all need
and
each
every-
other.
Absolutely. Every level, every human who gets touched by it, the person who has it, the spouse, the child, the parent, it can happen. It is imperative to reach out to a place like the Alzheimer's Association, if only on alts.org, to begin to understand what you're dealing with. You were just mentioning they can't learn. And because there's no information getting, what are you talking about? My brain, it's just slipping off. I just told you that 20 seconds ago.
Right.
The ability to lose your patience with somebody who is exhibiting these kind of bonkers symptoms that are hard to comprehend, and you write it down and they don't even remember to go to the piece of paper. Oh my goodness. If you don't get advice, start reading, start talking, and like they tell you when you try to adopt a child, which my husband and I also did, tell everyone you know. Don't be embarrassed, don't be coy, don't be afraid to cry. Mm-hmm. Tell everyone you know, because 9 times out of 10 those people have someone they know. And they want to tell their story, they want to hear your story, they want to give you advice of this perfect friend that had this place that she went, and network your way through this inevitable, ridiculous decline with help.
Catherine, I hope that you know you're a warrior. I know that those are corny words sometimes to people, but I'm so glad to be hearing your voice tonight in our important conversation.
It's an imperative conversation, and I'm so grateful you're having it. What an incredible deed you have done tonight, both of you.
Thank you, Catherine.
You too. Catherine, be well. We'll talk to you again soon.
Thanks.
I'll see you in the hallways.
You will.
She's incredible. She's one of our the commercials and some of the audio that you hear is put together by Catherine. Sometimes you'll hear her voice on our show, on our station, and we are so grateful to have her not only join this conversation, but to have her as one of our family. Our conversation continues after this break. We're gonna talk about a new program in the state of Illinois. This is Silver Search, and we're gonna talk to Officer Craig Burge when we come back in just a moment. And if you have questions or comments, we encourage you to call 312-981-7200. You're listening to The Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis, and we have partnered with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter to share these stories, to share your thoughts as well, and any questions you might have.
This is how much sex you have to burn off Halloween candy. A mini Snickers, 130 calories, 36 minutes. A Kit Kat, 70 calories, 19 minutes. Let's say you're really pressed for time. I'd go Peppermint Patty.
Oh, where'd this study come from?
People who had sex while they're eating candy.
Healthy Living with the Steve Cochran Show.
The doctors with their clipboards and
a
bunch of little nodes on bodies.
Okay, that's 31 minutes.
Fine.
What? The idea of doctors with clipboards in the room, that's better.
Take this, Mr. Goodbar, sir.
Weekday morning, 6 to 10 on WGN Radio.
You know what's really annoying?
What, Lindsay?
People who talk about the holidays too early.
I agree, but I want to remind everyone that the holidays are coming. And if you want to remodel your kitchen, the time is now.
Tom Jenke, I know your Edge Kitchen and Bath is where people should go for a kitchen remodel.
Absolutely.
How long does a typical remodel take?
Usually it takes 8 to 10 weeks, depending on the product lines you choose.
I guess the first step is to come by the Edge.
Yes, our designers will make your dream kitchen come true, all before the holidays.
Okay, so planning ahead can be a good thing.
It is.
I better start planning my wish list now.
Get a new kitchen in time for the holidays at the Edge Kitchen and Bath in Builder Supply Outlet on Cermak Road at 25th Avenue in Broadview.
Or the Edge Kitchen and Bath in Orland Park.
High-end look without the high-end price.
The Edge Kitchen and Bath Showroom.
From Builder Supply Outlet.
Online at edgekitchenandbath.com.
Offer not valid in all states or prohibited by law. Loans are subject to lender approval. See website for details.
Need some cash fast? No matter what your credit score is, just go to LendGenius.com to get access to a quick cash loan in as little as one business day. That's right, LendGenius.com is the new and smart way to get cash when you need cash fast. LendGenius is built to help you find a loan regardless of your credit score. Just go to LendGenius.com now so you can find a personal loan for your situation. LendGenius is fast and free to use. Our network of lenders will make you feel like a genius in just minutes, and your money will hit your bank account in as little as one business day. Use your cash loan to consolidate debts, pay off bills, or for whatever you need. Just go to LendGenius.com to get the cash you need now. Whatever your cash needs are, LendGenius is the genius way to get a quick cash loan in as little as one business day. Just go to LendGenius.com. That's LendGenius.com. LendGenius.com.
Home Care Assistance is proud to be a part of tonight's important show discussing Alzheimer's disease with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter. Home Care Assistance knows that caring for aging parents can be stressful. And when you add in the challenge of dementia, it's just that much harder on your own. That's when you call their expert team. Home Care Assistance provides the care that you need at home by matching your loved one with a trained and compassionate caregiver. Their caregivers are experienced in working with older adults, specializing in many conditions, including Alzheimer's disease and Parkinson's. The Home Care Assistance team focuses on enhancing quality of life for their clients. They clearly understand the rewards and the challenges of caring for a loved one. If your parent or partner is in need of trusted, comprehensive care, Home Care Assistance can help. You are not alone. Call Home Care Assistance for a free assessment. Call 847-853-7777. Again, that's 847-853-7777. Or visit homecareassistancechicago.com.
Special evening, sharing stories of courage and resilience in the face of Alzheimer's. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis on 720 WGN.
Joining us in studio for this very important conversation, we are pleased to introduce again Melissa Tucker. She is a director of helpline services and support groups. And one of the things that we've learned as we prepared for this show is that 60% of those with Alzheimer's disease will wander at some point during their diagnosis. Andrea and I were, you were talking about how this is something that has come up at WGN News.
Oh, yeah. In fact, we had a television news meeting a few weeks ago. We were talking about the silver alerts, and someone in the meeting said, wait a minute, what is that? Why is it called Silver Alert? And I was joking with your association with some of the members, and I said, let me tell you, we just had a conversation about this, so why don't you explain what the Silver Alert is and why it's called that?
And we also have on the line with us Officer Craig Birch, who is going to tell us a little bit about this too. Yeah. Melissa, tell us.
So Craig's really the expert, and he's done a tremendous amount of work in getting this legislation passed and in doing the training, so why don't we hear from him?
Hey, yeah. Craig, how are you doing?
Good, ladies. How are you guys doing tonight?
Very well.
Thanks, Craig.
Thrilled to have you on the show with us tonight.
Thanks for having me.
Of course. Tell us about the Silver Search Task Force.
Well, we're really excited about the Silver Search. It allows for a collaborative effort between many different agencies and organizations throughout the state of Illinois to all come together and utilize their various technologies and resources that they have available to them so that we can push information out to the general public when we're looking for somebody that wanders, that goes missing, when they have Alzheimer's or dementia. We know that this is becoming a problem. We know that more people will wander. We want to make sure that we have the ability and the resources available to us to make sure that we can return them as quickly and efficiently as we possibly can. So what Silver Search does is it brings over a ton of organizations together, from the police organizations to the Alzheimer's Association to Department of Transportation, and you guys were mentioning road boards. We could utilize the digital dynamic message boards over our interstates. We could utilize the tollway dynamic boards that you're seeing up there in your area. We utilize lottery terminals to post information about those people that are endangered, that go missing. We utilize Department of Aging and...
Oh, no. Have we lost Craig? I think we may have lost him. Let's see if we can. I know we were having a little bit of trouble with that line. So can you guys, we have, oh, by the way, producing on the show tonight, we have Tom Hush alongside executive producer Michael Heidemann. And we'll see if we can get the information. And we'll continue talking about the Silver Search task force.
These Silver Searches have been so successful, too. I know there was a couple. There was one, actually, I want to say a week or two ago, and immediately they found whoever they were looking for on, I believe it was the West Side. So these are proving to be extremely helpful.
Oh, it's been extremely helpful. A number of people have been found. It's so important, when, especially if somebody is driving. That's just about the scariest thing you can think of, is somebody with dementia is in the car. They take off. You don't know where they are.
Mm-hmm.
That can go seriously wrong in a lot of different ways. So to get that information out where people can see it, the highway signs, the lottery signs, and people see the license plate and they say, oh, I saw this. This is a missing person. They call it in, and that person gets connected with their family safely.
It makes so much sense, because it works so well for Amber Alerts, and now they have the activation that works the audio on your phone, too, that sends out the signal, just like it would a weather alert. So it makes perfect sense to do that.
Right. We have Craig back on the line, and I was looking at another number, that there are more than 220,000 Illinois residents that are currently living with Alzheimer's. So if 60% of those with Alzheimer's will wander, that means about 132,000 people may wander. I mean, and this is so hard to explain to people what that means. They don't remember where they are. By the way, Craig, how does law enforcement, how are they trained to identify somebody who may be battling dementia?
So really, we don't necessarily care what their actual disease or disorder or diagnosis is. What we're looking for is information that we can put out to the public so that we can return them home as quickly and as efficiently as possible. So when we rely on law enforcement to come to the scene, to talk to the caregivers, the guardians, the family members, and to find out about their loved ones, we sometimes look at the greatest predictor of future behavior is past behavior. Have they wandered before? Where have they gone? What have they talked about in the past? All these types of things help us in putting together our investigation to make sure that we can hone in on what are the proper areas in which those people may be found in. And then we can utilize the technologies that Silver Search brings to try to return those people home safely.
Craig, you just touched on something very important, and I think this goes for everybody, regardless of, as you mentioned, maybe not with Alzheimer's, but any sort of situation you might find yourself in when you have to call 911 because someone is missing, there's probably a moment where they panic, right? Because they're thinking about their loved one who's not home and might not be safe. What kind of information should people plan ahead if they have somebody who might go missing? Like, what kind of, you just mentioned maybe some stories, some elements that will help you guys, find them.
Sure. I mean, you know your loved one, the person you're giving care for, better than anybody else. So all we're asking for is to let us in. Let us know about that person. What are their characteristics? What are their needs? What are their dependencies? What are their routines? What are they familiar with or comfortable with? All these things, if you can, just kind of think of these things and settle down and provide that to law enforcement, the quicker you can get us that information, the better off we are in finding that person. So we're reliant on them to get us the information. And once we have that, then we can go and run and do what we need to do.
I would encourage, even before that happens, and I know that people don't want to think about the worst case scenario, sit down and write these things out. Type them up. You know, what are the things that are familiar or makes them feel safe? Or what words? What is? Don't you think, Melissa, is to have a plan ready to give in case you have to call 911?
One really important thing to think about is, in addition to the wonderful program at Silver Search, you can enroll your loved one in Medical Alert Safe Return, which is an identification bracelet, and you put all their information into a database. So if the person wanders, there's a picture of the person, a list of their medications, a description of them, the fact that they have this diagnosis, that can go right to law enforcement. It can go out to media to help find that person. So yes, if you are caring for someone with dementia, think about wandering before it happens.
I googled Silver Alert, and literally within 5 hours there was a silver alert issued for a missing 76-year-old Oklahoma City man who was found, and then 6 hours later an 87-year-old St. Joseph man who was found as well. So I guess, Craig, your success rate with these have been very successful so far. Yes.
Oh, most definitely. Yeah. And it's the reliant on the public's eyes and ears. We couldn't do this without the public providing us that information. That's why Silver Search is so important, is that it not only it brings in law enforcement, it also brings in the public to help with these type of endangered populations.
I want to encourage anyone who has concerns or needs more information to go to silversearchillinois.org. There is information in both English and in Spanish, and find out everything you need to know. Craig, I want to thank you so much. Am I missing anything? I want to make sure we cover. Is there anything I'm leaving on the table that you want to make sure people know?
The only thing is that when you see the messages out there, law enforcement really needs your help. So if you see any information, see something, say something, call 911, let us know what you see. It might be something small, but it might help, that little tip might help us return that person with Alzheimer's or dementia home to their family.
That's such a great, thank you so much for sharing that last thought as well. Craig, it's been extraordinary to talk to you. I appreciate your time. Again, we've been talking, is it officer? I'm going to make sure I'm addressing you correctly.
Just the missing persons coordinator for the state police.
Missing persons coordinator for state police, Craig Burge. Thank you so much. Have a great night, sir.
Thank you.
Thanks, Craig.
Thank you. More in a moment on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We will be turning to the calls and texts in just a moment on 720 WGN.
This winter, gather your family around the original social networking device, your fireplace. Get your fireplace ready now. Go with the industry's trusted leader, Lindeman Chimney and Fireplace. Go to cleanfireplace.com.
Do you want to sell your home? Any agent can list your home on the internet and put a sign in the ground. The Wexler Real Estate Group has the experience and full understanding of today's internet marketing techniques to get your home sold faster and for top dollar. I'm Ron Wexler, and over the past 35 years, I've helped thousands of homeowners. My partner Tammy Northcutt and our entire team at the Wexler Group is with you.
It's a battle worth fighting. It's the war on Alzheimer's, and Patty Vasquez and Andrea Darlis are talking about it right now. It's our three-hour special in partnership with the Illinois chapter of the Alzheimer's Association on WGN Radio.
So many families are struggling with Alzheimer's, with a loved one, maybe with a friend. This progressive disease that destroys memory and other important mental functions is scary. And we want to have this conversation in order to, one, make sure that you feel a little more informed, and we encourage you to seek out more information. And we thank you by joining us tonight as the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We have partnered with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter, and joining us in studio, we have, as we were speaking earlier, with chapter executive, with the director of Helpline and Support Services, Melissa Tucker, and along with her is chapter executive director Patrick Reedy, and walk volunteer Natalie Ziemba. And thank you all so much for coming in tonight. You might need headphones. I just want to let you know, Natalie, because some folks are calling in, and I've put a few of them on hold for a while, and they've been wanting to join the conversation. And we encourage anyone that wants to join us to call or text at 312-981-7200. Taxi driver Bob, you've been on hold for a while. How are you doing?
I'm doing okay. I'm dealing with some health issues myself with neuropathy in my leg. I had cellulitis and an abscess there, so constant pain is difficult to deal with, but it's getting better, so that's a good thing. But anyways, both of my parents died with full-blown dementia, and I want to thank your guests for being in studio there and doing what they do for families and the people that have to go through this insidious Alzheimer's and dementia. It's terrible, and it seems that it's getting worse and worse because we're living longer. Our minds are not necessarily staying as healthy as our bodies. My father moved to Florida, and unfortunately, he had dementia. I didn't know it at the time when he moved down there, but it was in its early stages. But he was very irritable, and I didn't know why, but now I know why. But anyways, he, in one of his more lucid days down there, my cousin lived down there and was helping him with things. And he found himself one day in a more lucid state and realized what was happening to him. And he expressed to my cousin that he wanted to kill himself. He wasn't going to kill himself, but he was very upset. And he told me for many years, if I can't take care of myself, I don't want to be around anymore. He told me that for a good 15 years. But anyway, so My cousin took it upon it, that given day he was going down to the VA hospital for his medication, and my cousin decided that he was going to tell somebody at the VA hospital what my father said, and they Baker Act him, and he had to spend a month in the psych ward of the VA hospital, and he had dementia. He didn't, you know, he didn't belong in the psych ward, and I told the people that were his caseworker there that he did have dementia. They, I guess, have to go through the proper channels of evaluating him and then eventually releasing him, which took a month. And every time I called him, he didn't have a cell phone, and so he would be called to the phone, and I could hear people screaming and yelling. It was very disconcerting.
Sure.
And very horrible for him and for myself that he had to go through that. Was that really necessary for them to do that? Could they have evaluated him that much quicker that he didn't have to endure being in a very uncomfortable situation going through dementia?
It's a great question.
Yeah, I'm so sorry that you went through that really difficult experience. That's so scary and upsetting. You know, there's a couple of things I want to address. Many times people will say things like, if I can't take care of myself, you know, I just want to end it, or I don't want to go on like this. And you know, that's why it's important to have these conversations. What do you want? What kind of plans can I make? You want to assure that person you're going to help them live the highest quality of life possible, give them some power over those decisions when you can. And another thing is that depression often goes along with dementia, and when you get people saying things like that, they want to end it, they don't want to go on. Unfortunately, we don't have good treatments for dementia, but we can treat depression. So it's really important, if someone is saying those things, to recognize, hey, this person's depressed, we can do something about that. The psychiatric treatment that you were talking about, you know, seeing a loved one in a psychiatric unit, that's very upsetting. Sometimes there are symptoms that go along with dementia that are like paranoia, that are very upsetting for the person. It needs to be treated. You know, I can't speak to the specifics of your situation. It sounds really difficult. And I'm always sorry to hear if someone has dementia and that's not being recognized or responded to appropriately. Sometimes in certain healthcare systems, there's not as much education or understanding about what that person with dementia is going through. And I know that does happen. I'm sorry, you know, anytime I hear that something like that has impacted somebody.
Bob, I want to thank you so much for sharing your story with us. I know it's very personal and not easy to do. Have a safe night, okay? Be well.
Yeah, you do the same. I hope that they find some way to eliminate so many people from having Alzheimer's and dementia, because it's so painful for everybody.
It is. Mm-hmm. It really is. Thank you, Bob. From the 815, the guilt I have is terrible. I was not aware of the stages of dementia. I would yell at her, and as your program stated, she was patient with me. Currently, you're talking about Silver Search. The police found her walking around the block at 1 a.m. Mother eventually passed of Alzheimer's, which was finally diagnosed in a home in 1996 at the age of 85. I cry often because I feel so bad about how I treated her. I see some symptoms of short-term memory loss within myself, my older brother as well. But my main question is, how do I get over this guilt? I admire you for doing this program. Thank you, Bernadette. And that's from the 815.
How do you get over the guilt? Yeah.
I've never talked to a caregiver that does not feel some degree of guilt. No one feels like they're doing enough. It's such a struggle. And because the disease is always changing, you don't know what works now isn't going to work the next time. And then you're in that struggle again. And, you know, you said your mom was diagnosed in 1996. There was not a lot of awareness about this. You can only know what you know. You do the best that you can with what you had. And it sounds like you did that. And, you know, just you might need to talk to somebody about this. Anytime someone passes from dementia, that's a complicated grief, because it's not a sudden loss, it's a gradual loss of this person that you knew. And that makes the grieving process very difficult, and the fact that it's complicated by, you know, your memories of having these arguments. You know, forgive yourself, you did the best that you can. Every caregiver I've ever talked to feels some degree of that guilt. And if you need to talk to somebody about the stuff that you're carrying with you, you know, I hope that you'll seek that out.
Can anybody call the Alzheimer's Association?
Absolutely.
A family member, a caregiver, anyone can call at any time?
That's correct. At 24 hours a day, 7 days a week, there's a counselor or social worker there who can talk to you. You're a caregiver, you're an interested member of the public, you're someone who's concerned about your own memory issues, anybody can call.
Patrick, you wanted to hop in?
Yeah, well, I just wanted to note, you know, we're so fortunate to have Melissa and her colleagues who are, as you can tell, so skilled in dealing with these really difficult subjects that families are wrestling with. So, yeah, that helpline's available to everyone. And, yeah, I just wanted to point out that's just one of the services that we provide to families that are going through these difficult and challenging times.
And we were talking about Silver Search. Mike wanted to join the conversation as well. Hey, Mike, what did you want to say?
Yeah, I was fortunate enough to spend 4 or 5 months last winter in Florida.
Uh-huh.
And I was telling your screener that out there they use those message boards above the highways constantly, and every single day there would be a Nova Silver alert on there with the car description, license plate, and so on. And since I've been back here, I've only heard, you know, maybe once or twice of the Silver Alert. And I think that we could make use of our boards, like, for instance, on the Kennedy. They just use them for the time of traffic and, you know, maybe a message about texting.
Mike, it's a newer program, and I think as more people become aware that they can reach out to our first responders, that those boards are being used, and chances are you'll see that they're being utilized more often going forward. So I appreciate that you're somebody who pays attention and keeps their eyes open for those messages.
Yeah, I thought that, you know, probably because there's so many retirement communities in Florida that maybe it's happening more and more there.
I think it's a combination of both. One, that it's a new program here. It's probably more established there, and perhaps the aging population in Florida as well contributes to that.
And if I could mention, too, my best friend, his mother is going through it now, and I can't stress how hard it is on the family. I mean, he's been going through it for years now. She's been put back and forth on and off hospice like 3 or 4 different times. And I just don't know how the families get through it. It's such a hard thing.
It is. And we're going to continue to talk with our friends from the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter about those supports and the help that's available when we come back. Thank you so much, Mike. It was always an important conversation, and we appreciate your contribution. More in a moment on 720 WGN.
The reality, the pain, the courage, the battle. Patty Vasquez and Andrea Darlis talk Alzheimer's right now on WGN Radio.
Alzheimer's is a type of dementia that causes problems with memory, thinking, and behavior. Symptoms usually develop slowly and get worse over time, becoming severe enough to interfere with daily tasks. We are joined in studio on the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis by Melissa Tucker, who is the Director of Helpline and Support Services for Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter. Also, Patrick Reedy, who is the Alzheimer's Association Illinois Chapter Executive Director, newly minted. And we also have in studio with us Natalie Ziamba, Walk to End Alzheimer's participant and volunteer. Her team has raised more than $10,000 so far, and that's counting. And we were talking briefly off the air about, you know, people ask what they can do, how can they participate. What do you tell those folks, Patrick?
Sure, thanks. We have an awesome example of volunteerism to my left here in Natalie, but we're a volunteer-driven organization. So many people that volunteer are personally affected and find us, or we find them, and provide an amazing outlet to help raise not only awareness but critical funds to help drive our mission. So volunteering is a huge part of what we do, and we're very fortunate to have great support from the community in that way.
How did you get involved, Natalie?
Well, after my father's diagnosis in 2010, I grieved for a bit, and then I thought, you know what, I have to somehow get involved. I have to do something. And I was a solo walker. I just did it on my own. I didn't have a team the first year that I did it, and that was in 2013. And I raised close to $1,000, and within a few weeks of the Walk to End Alzheimer's here in Chicago, I was contacted by a member of the association, and they said, you know, on your own, you raised an incredible amount of money. Would you be interested in volunteering and being part of the committee? And I said, absolutely. What do I have to do? So we sat down, we chatted for a bit, and I was on the committee the second year, and I had a team. It was very small, but we raised a few $1,000s. And of course, the day of the Walk to End Alzheimer's, it is incredible. It's inspirational. You're with people that identify with you, with your struggle. You cry, you laugh. at the end of it, you kind of hug and you all come together and you realize, you know what, we're not just here to raise money. That's part of it, but you're here to do outreach and you're here to tell your story and to share with each other and find other people that are going through the exact same thing that you're going through. And I have just continued to be involved with WALK. Now I'm part of the Alzheimer's Ambassadors Program. I go to DC every year. And through that outreach, now we're talking about legislation and we're meeting with lawmakers. I meet with my member of Congress. I met with Senator Durbin last year and talking to them about the importance of research and the different pieces of legislation that we need to pass in order to kind of keep this conversation going. And one day we will find a cure. I feel that in my lifetime that we will do that. And just kind of continuing the conversation and finding friends and finding other advocates that share your struggle. Mm-hmm.
How does it feel to work with lawmakers?
Incredible.
It's a whole new facet for you, isn't it?
I absolutely love it. I pour everything I have into it. It's my passion in life. It really is. This is not a career. This is not my job. It's like
it's
a second
life.
Job.
It's, your
it's
life.
My life.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
It's my life. And being a volunteer for me, honestly, it is incredible because you find this network of people that know you. Mm-hmm. You don't even have to say a word and they know exactly what you're going through. Mm-hmm. And is that so important? Because, you know, you cry your tears. I've said my goodbye. My father is still here. I've already said my one goodbye to him.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a two goodbye. That's what Alzheimer's and dementia is. It's two goodbyes. You say your goodbye and then you wait. And it's years and years and years sometimes to say your second goodbye.
Yeah.
But the people that are there with you on day of walk, the people in the ambassadors program, you just look at each other and you know exactly what you're going through. You don't even have to say a word and you know. And that's the importance of the Alzheimer's Association here in Illinois, here in Chicagoland. There is a group of people that will help you. Reach out. Just make a call. Don't even register. Just come the day of walk and just participate and look around at this huge network of people that are there for you.
Mm-hmm. From Samantha, she says, the walk to end Alzheimer's is so crucial to raise awareness, so I want to thank Natalie for being such an all-star in that field. Thank you for your courage. We'll talk about how people can get involved in the walk and about these great license plates as well when we come back. It's the Patty Vasquez Show with Andrea Darlis. We've partnered with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter, and we continue to take your calls and texts at 312-981-7200. Joe, we didn't forget about you, but it's going to be after the news. More in a moment on 720 WGN. In a few minutes, the stories that matter from the Northwestern Medicine Newsroom. And listeners want to know if this conversation that we've been having, this incredibly special show that we've partnered with the Alzheimer's Association Illinois chapter with, it's been enlightening. I know that you have affected and helped a lot of people listening right now. And yes, the show will be available online. Michael Heidemann and Tom Hush will be posting these. They'll be available on WGNradio.com and wherever you listen to podcasts, as well as on my Facebook page, Patty V Show. And the link will also be available on my Twitter. And I know that we will make it available for you guys as well. Thank you so much to our guests, Patrick, Melissa, and Natalie. You guys were
thanks, you guys.
Incredible.
You're welcome.
And thank you for sharing your stories.
Of course.
Very personal and very powerful.
Well, it's our pleasure. The gratitude that was expressed earlier, it's our privilege and our obligation to do this work on behalf of the Alzheimer's Association. But we thank you for helping us to raise concern and awareness today. We thank all of our volunteers who Natalie so ably represented here tonight for all that they help us do. And, of course, we thank all the supporters, many of whom will be out with us at the walk on Sunday. So
registration,
thank you,
8 a.m., ceremony at 9:30. The walk is at 10 a.m. And you could put all your Instagram pictures at ALZ Illinois, Twitter at ALZ Illinois, yes?
Excellent.
That's right.
Have a great night, you guys.
Thank you very much.
Our show continues after the news, and you know you want to be listening to the Steve Cochran Show as he celebrates the most valuable person on the planet weekday mornings at 720 on 720 WGN Chicago. Smart speaker users, just say play WGN Radio on TuneIn.